I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. This is going to be episode number 263, and John, I've had a cold this week, so my voice is a little scratchy.
It's not as bad as it is sometimes when you're sick.
Yeah, and it's not as scratchy as my whole audio was the last time we frickin' recorded.
Yeah, I apologize, because I noticed that, but there's been times where when I hear you, it's messed up, but then it ends up being fine, whatever's recorded, and I should have said something. So we apologize for the audio issues in the last couple of podcasts. The Brandon Sanderson one, the audio was fine, but the ones prior to that were not. But anyway, that is Patrick. He's an author and a blogger and a podcaster, and you can check him out at ATFMB on Twitter. And my name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a composer and a podcaster and a teacher. Check. Oh no, it's a dog. Ah! That dog is attacking us. Ah!
Someone's at the door. Oh my God. Someone's at the door.
That is our guest's dog, and do not worry. We'll introduce you in a second. That is a hallmark of our podcast, is pets making noise in the background. So do not worry about that. But I think that's a good time to introduce our guest today, and that is Lindsay Smith. She's the author of Secret Scandal and Dream Strider. She's also the lead writer of The Witch Who Came in from the Cold over at Cereal Box And her name is Lindsay Smith. Lindsay, thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me and my loud dog. I really appreciate it.
That's okay. I should mention that Lindsay's website is lindsaysmith.net, and that's Lindsay with an A, LINDSAY. And you can follow her on Twitter at LindsaySmithDC. I'm assuming you live in Washington, D.C. then.
I do. I'm a D.C., not native, but it certainly feels like it at this point. And interested in foreign affairs and writing about spies all the time. It's kind of a hallmark of my writing brand and my style of storytelling.
Yeah. I was contacted by one of your publicists to talk about this project, and there was a lot of really cool authors in on it. And I'd like to kind of sort of save talking about that for our main topic of discussion once we get through our picks and all of that. But, you know, maybe before we get into all that, maybe you can kind of mention, because you have other projects that you do, a couple of different books out. And so maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about some of those things before we get into the main thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So my first couple of novels, it's a duology, so it's two books, but it's a series for young adults called Secret with a K and Scandal also with a K, because it's about a group of psychic teenagers in Soviet Russia, and they're being forced to use their psychic abilities to spy for the KGB. So set in the 1960s, lots of spy games as well, but with that added element of different styles of mind reading that they use.
Awesome, cool. Well, you know, before we get into our leaving, then let's get into our picks of the week. And before we get into our picks of the week, I do want to mention to everybody, I often save this for the very end, or sometimes forget it all altogether. But if you like the podcast, Patrick and I have a thing called Patreon, where you can support the podcast. You can go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds, and you can pledge whatever you'd like. Pledge $1 a month. You can pledge a little less than that. You can pledge a little more than that. Whatever works for you.
If you get pledge $5 or more, you get to see all the cool stuff that John always says I'm showing on screen for an audio podcast.
Yes, if you go to our Patreon page,
like,
and you
lightsaber universal remote controls.
Yes, you would be able to see that right now.
You could have seen Lindsay's Kylo Ren. That would have been
awesome. Yes. So there are a few perks if you pledge at the higher levels, and we have, I believe right now, we have 41 patrons backing us, and we are so appreciative of those folks who are doing that. Thank you, everybody who does that. And if you'd like to join them, if you get value out of the show, go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds. On to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Lindsay, what is your pick this week?
Oh gosh, I have so many. Right now, I just started reading a book called The Mirror Empire by Cameron Hurley.
Sure.
Oh, it's awesome. She just does this really amazing inventive world building like you've never seen in fantasy before, and her prose is just like really good and chewy. So I'm enjoying that a lot. Not very far in, but I'm enjoying it quite a bit. And then I've been playing, I'm always playing Heroes of the Storm, like, nonstop. There's one pick, and then recently started playing Firewatch alongside my husband. We kind of sit down and play video games that are more immersive storytelling side by side. Firewatch is a really cool, mysterious video game that's kind of an adventure, but there's also this weird story kind of unfolding around you as you play.
Cool. You know, I am a big fan of many of the Frog Pants network of podcasts, and I know Scott Johnson, who's the head of that, he is very into Heroes of the Storm. I know on like, and I don't listen to any of the video game specific podcasts. I listen to the more general ones, but that comes up all the time. So what is Heroes of the, in terms of a game, like what, I think it's a little different than say World of Warcraft and such. Like what are some of the elements of it that differentiate it?
Yeah, so Heroes is more of an online battle arena type game, so kind of like Dota 2 or League of Legends, where you've got five heroes on each side who have different abilities that are battling it out. So a lot of the heroes are from those Blizzard games like World of Warcraft or StarCraft. One of my favorites to play is Jaina, who's this frost mage who does some fun things. Then there's
Frost Mage
some
Unite!
Heroes from Diablo. Yes! Longtime mage player here. But it's really fun, and it's a lot, it's a very, almost kind of an intimate game, and you have a very small core set of abilities that you're using like, to fight these other heroes, but you're also trying to accomplish different objectives, like capture the base, things like that. So competitive, but really fun.
Cool. Excellent. Okay, my pick this week is Luke Skywalker Can't Read. It is a book by Ryan Britt. Ryan Britt, who writes for, does a lot, or has done a lot of writing for Tor.com. I feel like he might have been like one of the editors over there for a while, maybe still is. I feel like his name comes up over there quite a bit. And it is a collection of essays. It's a fairly short read. One of the essays is titled Luke Skywalker Can't Read, but it's a lot of those, you know, I sort of compare it to, I'm a big fan of writers like Chuck Klosterman, sort of these nonfiction writers who, you know, they take various elements of pop culture, whether it's music or science fiction or what have you, and then, but are also sort of weaving sort of almost a memoir about their own lives and how these things have impact on their lives as well as, you know, our society in general. And Luke Skywalker Can't Read is it's a really good sort of meditation on that. And the essay titled Luke Skywalker Can't Read is exactly that, where he sort of puts this evidence that you never actually see people reading in any of the Star Wars films other than other than the time that like R2-D2 is putting script up on the X-Wing when Luke and he are talking. You don't really see many examples of people reading the written word. Now, there's a language there. I think it's called Aurabesh, I believe. That was sort of coined later. But, you know, it just talks of, it's a really interesting article, like, to go that into that, like, everybody is essentially functionally illiterate in the Star Wars universe, and he backs it up, and that, he goes like, yeah, well, because everybody is, you know, watching, you know, like holograms instead of reading, and there's the holocrons. Right. Instead of, so it's basically someone who takes a concept like that, and he does it with various aspects of Star Trek and Doctor Who. And so if you're into all this, if you listen to the show, you're into all that stuff, and if you're into sort of a very sort of intellectual take on it, definitely worth your time reading. It's a short read. Once again, Luke Skywalker Can't Read by Ryan Britt, B-R-I-T-T. Patrick, what's your pick?
Well, my pick this week illustrates why people should back us at the $5 level.
Because you got to see it.
Because you got to see it. Because you got to see it. Yep. It's cool. I was driving home from Critique Group last Saturday, and I had to take the highway. And the big electronic signs that they put up? Mm-hmm. It was flashing that there was an accident up ahead, and I was like, ah, crap. So I got off the highway, and I went into Barnes & Noble, and I'm walking around, and just trying to, you know, give time for it to clear and everything, and I come across this, which is one of the Funko Pop vinyl figures.
Yes.
And it's the Fourth Doctor. And what I didn't realize until just this morning, as I'm sitting here and I was talking to Lindsay before we started recording, there was two versions. I didn't realize that. I was looking at it, and I didn't like the box I grabbed one and I didn't like the box that it was in, and so I grabbed a different one. The one that was in the box I didn't like, he was holding jelly babies in his hand. And in this one, he's holding a sonic screwdriver.
Mm.
Nice.
But he's the fourth doctor. He's Tom Baker, which is my doctor. So it's
one of those with the great scarf.
With the great scarf. Yeah, it's one of the vinyl figures. So it's pretty cool. Pop television, Doctor Who, fourth doctor. They actually have the 12th doctor, the 11th doctor, the 10th doctor, the fourth doctor. Gosh, go figure. They've got a Dalek, a Cyberman, an Adipose, a Weeping Angel, and a TARDIS.
Cool. You know, in the book that I mentioned, Ryan talks about Doctor Who and talks about how he got into it with Eccleston and David Tennant. Mm-hmm. Those were his doctors. And he was talking about how within the span of Doctor Who, and I haven't watched a whole lot of Doctor Who. I watched the Eccleston season and I watched one of the Tennant seasons, and then I sort of fell off after that. But how one of the things that really makes people have such an emotional connection to that show is not only that they have their doctor, but then there is the regeneration when they lose their doctor. Mm-hmm. And it is what people, I think he sort of makes this argument that that's what really ties people so strongly to it. Because when you think about all of the different fan bases for various science fiction properties, I really feel like the Doctor Who folks have the most emotional connection, I think, in a lot of ways to that. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right, because people do say that. They're like, you know, as soon as you find out someone likes Doctor Who, the question that you ask is, you know, who's your doctor?
Yeah.
And that's why years ago we had, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget his name. We had the guy on who was the musician who did the Who's Your Doctor song.
Oh, Dale Chase.
Yeah, Dale Chase. You know, it's become part of the pop culture. It's like, who is your doctor? And and there's t-shirts, you never forget your first doctor, you know, all this kind of stuff that all ties into Doctor Who. So yeah, it's like you come into the show with a specific doctor, and that's your doctor, and that's the actor that defines the role for you, and then they switch it, and then you're like, man, I just remember when you know, it was such and such, and it was such and such. And there are people who liked Eccleston so much that they never went any further. And Tom Baker was my doctor because he was my first doctor, but I did really enjoy David Tennant. I thought he was a fantastic doctor.
That dude's just a great actor too. Because my wife and I are actually watching the Jessica Jones series now, which is why it's taken me so long, because my wife and I can watch maybe one night of television a week at this point. So we watch like an episode and a half. So we're like, we're not quite through it yet because of that, but he's awesome in that too. You know, funny, I don't know if I was saying this the last time we recorded, but I thought there were 10 episodes to Jessica Jones. I don't know if I was telling this, Patrick, but yet we're watching the 10th episode. I'm like, oh yeah, there's 10 episodes. It's going to wrap up right here. And that particular episode ends on a cliffhanger. And I'm like, no way.
No.
There's three more episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, there's 13 episodes. I'm like, that's a really weird place to end the season. That doesn't make any sense.
And Jessica Jones has been renewed for a second season.
Yes.
So there will be a second season. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but yeah. We're supposed to get Luke Cage here soon as well.
Yep. That's next.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So,
can't wait. Iron Fist later. Yep.
Lindsay, I have a question for you.
Sure.
I see your books on your bookshelf. Do I also see, is that Curses and Conspiracies?
No, I've got A Tyranny of Petticoats, which is an anthology I'm going to be in. Which is the other one you're talking about?
The one that was just above that.
Oh no, this is another YA book from the library.
Oh,
Summer of Chasing Mermaids.
I gotcha. The spine looked like Curses and Conspiracies. I was like, oh, she's a Gail Carriger fan.
Well, I do like Gail Carriger, but I have not caught up on that series yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, I have about five different stacks of library books and other books that I'm studying right now. And the work never ends.
No, it never does. It never does.
Yeah, reading really begets more reading, because we get a lot of books sent to us, which
Absolutely.
Is awesome. But I buy a ton of ebooks and audiobooks, and I take a lot of stuff out of the library still. It's like every possible type of medium I can get my hands on in terms of reading, I get it. And you would think, it's like, why don't you just read the books that are sent to you? It's like, because I don't get everything that I like sent to me, so I have to buy stuff too.
Right. You know?
But all right, well, let's talk about what you're here to talk about, because it's such an interesting concept. So it's the name of the thing that you're working on is called The Witch Who Came In From the Cold. And right there, obviously, there's a call to the – I always pronounce his name wrong, but John – can you say his last name? The
John Le Carré.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, he's a very well-known novelist who writes a lot of these spy novels. So obviously right there, that's sort of the angle you're going at, sort of an urban mm-hmm. fantasy meets spy thriller. But maybe you could tell us, before you tell us specifically about your project, maybe you can explain the whole concept behind Cereal Box, and it's cereal with an S, obviously. It's not an actual, mm-hmm. Literal cereal box that you're eating. But,
no breakfast food.
Yeah, no breakfast here. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that format before we get into the actual piece that you're working on.
Well, Cereal Box is really cool in that they are focused on producing this episodic style of fiction. And it's especially interesting since there is an actual podcast called Cereal that kind of gives you the same sort of feeling, that episodic storytelling unfolding over the course of multiple weeks. And that's what Cereal Box aims to do, is take, instead of just like a novel of stories or a selection of short stories, we try to have these self-contained episodes, and there's a new one every week for about 13 weeks is how long our series is. And you just tune in every week like you would your favorite TV show, and just, or you can wait until the end and binge watch it, but we prefer it if you tune in every week. And we just want each episode, each week you get kind of the satisfying short version of the story, but it still ties into this longer story arc. So it's a really fun take on like what Charles Dickens used to do back in the day, the serialized tale that then eventually, once you smash it all together, it can be this really extra long novel.
Right. So now tell us a little something about The Witch Who Came In From the Cold, which you created with Max Gladstone. Max been on the show before, and he's got a very popular series of books out there. So maybe you could tell us a little something specifically about your project.
Yeah, well, like you alluded to with the title, that really covers it. It is a spy thriller that also has quite a bit of magical elements in it. Our setting is 1970 Prague, so it's kind of this middle ground in the Cold War between the United States and Soviet Russia. And there's the KGB and the CIA who are playing all these spy games against each other in Prague, which is just this gorgeous, ancient, and also very kind of mystical, superstitious city as well. You've got all these mythological tales like the Golem of Prague or the sorceresses who used to inhabit the Prague Castle. But those, on top of the spy games, you have the secret world of witches who are working with these elements running underneath the surface of everything. And some of the witches might be in the intelligence services, because that's a great way to pass information to witches who have been separated because of the geopolitical landscape of the 1970s. So there's a lot of different intermixing spy games between witches and political systems going on that really creates an explosive setting.
Now, maybe you can tell us a little something about your background, because even just right in your Twitter bio, it says, foreign affairs junkie, Russophile. Is it Russophile or Russophile?
How would Russophile, you actually? Yeah.
Explain what a Russophile would be.
Just someone who is an avid Russia watcher, and that's been me. Like my first memory is of the Berlin Wall coming down. So mm-hmm. I remember just feeling like this entire new world had been opened up, this hidden land almost in Soviet Russia. So I've just always been fascinated with Russia as I grew up, and I was fortunate enough to study Russian as a language really from the age on into college. Studied with the great poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko at the University of Tulsa. I've gotten to go on several like study abroad trips over there and so on. So I've just always been fascinated with the culture and watching how it's changed since the Berlin Wall fell through Gorbachev and Yeltsin and Putin. Now
is that why you have that poster behind you of a shirtless Putin?
My friends actually put together a calendar for me once of all these ridiculous Putin photos, like him riding the tiger and wrestling with sharks and all that stuff. So yeah, I that's definitely me. I've always been really interested in the Russian political landscape and seeing how they've tried to make the adjustments to a more democratic country and then kind of backsliding into more authoritarianism under Putin on. So my day job, because hey, guess what? It's hard to be a full-time writer these days.
Yep.
My day job is in foreign affairs, especially cybersecurity, but looking at like the international political effects, especially focused on Russia, because that's always been my main interest.
That's really interesting. You know, with Russia, they're in an interesting point now in terms of let's even just call it pop culture. For people who are regular listeners to our show, I talk a lot about various metal music that I like. I really like a lot of heavy metal music, and especially what would be considered the washed up guys from like the 80s, who are still out there touring. And yes, a lot of these bands and acts do quite well in Russia now, because Russia did not get any of that at the time it was popular. You know, so there would be, just sort of illegal copies that would make it was like this really, I imagine like any sort of what we would consider pop culture, a lot of it would get to Russia through sort of illegal means. And it would be like these secret, like, oh, the Iron Maiden album that we weren't able to get, or whatever the case may be. But I read about, and those acts typically just do much better in Europe and Asia than they do in the United States anyway, which is more appealing for whatever reason. But I know that's where, you know, because they really were starved for it for so long, that a lot of those, acts do really well there. You know, are there other sort of instances of that? Like, do you find that even with, say, you know, literature or TV or anything like that, that it's becoming a thing over there now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Russia has really taken well to the sci-fi and fantasy genre. There's quite a few prolific Russian sci-fi and fantasy authors who I enjoy reading in Russian because their works haven't been translated yet, who are really interesting. Like the Jitchenkos, I think they actually have had a couple translated. I don't have my Russian shelf next to me, so I can't look at titles right now, but there's a great tradition of sci-fi that's really growing now over there. And metal too, like you mentioned. Russia, under the Soviet Union, they never really had a strong sense of subculture like we had over here in the 50s onward. But there were little pockets of things. Like there were kind of the Russian hipsters who were like the big Elvis fans, and they would smuggle in artifacts like that. And it always had kind of like this very, very small following, but that slowly exploded over the past couple of decades as they've gotten better access.
I know there is a documentary, which I haven't seen yet, but it's been on my radar for a while, where it's Phil Rosenthal, who is one of the creators of Everybody Loves Raymond. And
I love
like
that,
how,
yeah.
Are you aware of that one, Patrick?
That's where I first found out about, what's it called? Kidnap and Ransom Insurance.
Yeah. So the documentary is, you know, it's kind of like how authors have foreign rights for their books. That happens with TV shows too. So this was Phil Rosenthal going over to Russia, and they were going to adapt Everybody Loves Raymond for Russia.
Oh, wow.
Obviously it's, you know, so I think it's a lot of where, you know, them having their sort of Russian sensibility of this, and how it was, there was a lot of clashes. I know where it was like, oh, it's the mom making breakfast in the morning, and like they would have her in an evening dress, and he'd be like, why is she in an evening dress? Like, that's not how, they're like, well, she has to look good, you know? So so it's a lot of like real culture clashes. It's one that I've been wanting to watch.
Well, and I just remember the very beginning of it is when he's first talking to somebody, he's talking on the phone, and they're like, do you have your K&R insurance? And he's like, my what? And they go, yeah, you have your K&R, and you have, and then when they kidnap you, they don't cut anything off. You know, they just pay the ransom and release you. And he's like, I don't want to go there.
It is. It's like they had to play catch up over this very short period of time. Like the first time I went to Russia in 1997, everyone was obsessed with the 70s soap opera Santa Barbara. It was the wildest thing. Like, that's all they would watch. And then 2 years later, I go back and they're all obsessed with like these early 90s shows. And then
they
steamrolled from there.
That's been kind of almost like a cliche joke that some parts of the world get American television much, much later. Even like The Big Bang Theory made fun of that a little bit with Raj's parents in India having to go because Doogie Howser was on. And it was the most popular show in India.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Now, what you were describing, The Witcher Came from the Cold and the various things with it, you know, one of the things it reminded me of, and then I realized that they're involved in these cereal box things as well, it reminded me a bit of Ian Tregellis wrote a series of books called The Milkweed Triptych, which are amongst my favorite books, where it's sort of set in a, you know, World War II, post-World War II time, where essentially the Germans were trying to make X-Men and the English were witches and warlocks and they had magic. So that was sort of the setting of it. It grows into much more than that, but now I know he has a project as well. And now, is it related to yours, or is it a separate project altogether for Cereal Box?
Ian is one of the writers on The Witch Who Came In From the Cold.
Okay.
So it's myself, and I've also got kind of those Russian historical books as well. And Ian and I have talked a lot about how our shared affinity for kind of adding superpowers into history like that. Mm-hmm. So it's myself, Max Gladstone, Ian Tregellis, and then Cassandra Rose Clark, who's written a number of excellent YA fantasy and also adult fantasy.
Yeah, I know we're gonna get her on, because when this was pitched to me by your publicist, I'm like, well, that sounds great. We've had Max and Ian on before. We'd like to get them, but I wanted to get you on first because you haven't been a guest on the show before. And I'm like, well, let's, instead of having like four people on one show, let's spread it out over time, because you know, it seems like a cool thing. So the other part of it too, so with this idea of serialized fiction, so in terms of how you can do it, like, is it, can you sort of sign up for a subscription and then it just automatically goes on your Kindle or something? Or how are some of the formats work with it?
Yeah, they've got a couple of different options. There is a Cereal Box native app that you can get, I think, for both Android and iOS, that if you buy a subscription, it'll just automatically download the new episode each week once it's available. And that gives you access to both the text and the audiobook version.
That's cool.
Yeah, the audiobook is really nice because I think a lot more people are taking advantage of it than even they might have expected, just because it does feel so much like a podcast where you tune in every week to get the next part of the story. And it's great for like commuters, people like me who you know, train or something to work. I love listening into the audio version, even though I've read it a billion times as the editor.
Do you know who's doing the narration for it then?
I can't remember the name of the company, but here's the great thing about Cereal Box is they've really gotten so many top-notch talent in terms of the audiobook and the writers, the marketing team, the publicists, everybody. I've just been so impressed by the way it's set up. Publishing is, you probably know this too, Patrick, publishing is a very slow and very reactive industry.
No,
but
I never heard that before.
Yeah, just but Cereal Box has been so impressive. Like they even pay you on time, which is always a nice change of publishing. Something new and unheard of.
Now, with the audio and the ebook formats, now within the native app, is there any kind of syncing between the two, or do you just like choose one or the other to
he's asking because he likes the whisper sync thing between the
I like the
and
whisper
the
sync thing.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that is part of it or not, or if you even know that or not.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't tried that, but I'll have to check that out next week on it. That sounds good.
I haven't been doing that as much lately because I've sort of, the way that my reading habits have gone is that I have because there's so many books that I want to read that, and I never thought I would have been in this place as a reader, but I always have like at least three different books going on at the same time these days. And so that's a good way to separate. It's like I have an audiobook going, I have an ebook going, and I have a print book going. And then
because there's
various times of the day where one of those formats is the best format to read in. You know, like I like reading a print book when I'm eating because I don't want to get schmutz on my Kindle, but if I get a little schmutz on the page, you know, rub it off, it's no big deal, it's not going to break a device. But so I haven't been doing the whisper sync quite
John,
as much.
Are you getting schmutz on library books?
I get schmutz on library books.
Come on.
And I get schmutz on the books that I own and the books that I, not too much, but I try to be good about it, but you know, you can wipe it off schmutz off a book. You can't, it's kind of hard when it's on your like phone or your Kindle or something. Because I think with a serialized fiction, I think audio is a really fantastic way to do it, because so many people like who are listeners of our podcast, like podcasting is a big, you know, it's a real growing format. I think more and more people are discovering it as a source of entertainment and news. And I think, you know, you have the history of a lot of fiction podcasts too. You have Skate Pod, and you have
Podcastle,
all these, all these different ones that have been around really kind of since the dawn of podcasting. So I think to have it as a subscription kind of thing or something that's delivered each week, it would be really appealing to quite a few people if it's one ongoing story. Mm-hmm. Now, and then you said after the fact, once it's completed, then people will be able to buy just like say, now is there plans to have it as print after the fact, or is it going to be ebook and audiobook only?
Nothing's set in stone just yet, but absolutely we're going to have, I think, an ebook compilation at the end of the season. We're planning multiple seasons too for The Witch, so there's lots and lots of stories. We're trying to make it as television-like as possible for those people who do want to binge read and wait until the end. Mm-hmm. There's a subscription, and I'm sorry I didn't finish pointing this out, that you can also buy the individual episodes if you choose to, just through the Kindle store, the Barnes & Noble Nook store, things like that, and the first one's free if you want to just check it out.
Yeah, you know, and this reminds me also quite a bit of the comic book industry.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, we were talking to John Bivens, who's an artist for some Image Comics a while back, and, you know, he was telling us how, you know, a lot of people just read the graphic novels, like the, you know, when they compile it. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's how I do it. And he's like, you know, and he goes, that's how I do it too. But unfortunately, the ones that get to be graphic novels are the ones where the floppy sales, the individual ones do well. So there's a real need sort of economically to sort of prove that there's enough interest in it by sort of the single sales before they're willing to go and put it as a graphic novel form. That sounds like it's probably sort of a similar thing from your end, because you even mentioned like, yes, we would like it if you go and do and buy the individual episodes for now. So I'm assuming that's sort of the same deal. Yep.
I love buying like the compilations for like Black Widow, mm-hmm. And Little Lady Thor and so on, but I've tried to get more into the habit of showing up every month to buy my new Princess Leia comics, things like that.
So
it definitely makes a big difference.
I have the Princess Leia graphic novel sitting right in my bag over there.
Awesome.
I just started. Yeah. No, the Star Wars comics have been very good too. I've been reading all the graphic novels. I've really enjoyed them. So I don't know if you've been, have you been reading all of them or just the Princess Leia one so far?
I just got started with the Princess Leia. I can't wait to check out like the Poe Dameron one that they're going to be coming out with. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for that, and the Darth Vader ones as well. But then I've really been reading a lot of the new Star Wars licensed novels that they're putting out, like mm-hmm. Claudia Gray in particular, her Lost Stars book is phenomenal. I'm really enjoying those.
That was my favorite book of last year.
Now you're talking His Magic. Yep.
Yeah, I think I've read all of the new books so far. That was my favorite out of all of them. And I pretty much liked all of them. Any of them, but that I thought was the best. And she is writing. I think it's called Bloodline, I think is the next one that's coming out that she is doing. And I don't know if those characters are the ones that are going to be in it, the Thane, Carell, and Sierra? I can't think of the other main character.
No, I think Bloodline is actually going to be a princess or a General Leia story.
Yes, I know,
so
it's a
I'm
General
Leia. I'm very excited for that.
So I am too, because I thought she did a magnificent job with Lost Stars. So
it's very good. John, have you seen the How It Should Have Ended, The Force Awakens?
I haven't yet. I usually save those things for my Friday night YouTubing, which I often do.
I'm going to spoil something for you, because there's a great little clip. It's Rey and Luke on the island, right? Uh-huh. She's holding out the lightsaber to him, and he throws back his hood and he looks at her and he's like, "Wow, you're hot." And she says, we might be related. That's okay. I'm kind of into that.
Oh, that's so wrong. That's so funny. Did you guys? Okay, spoiler alert for Star Wars, which it's been out. I think it's out of the movies now for the most part.
I've seen it five times.
Yeah, if everybody listening to this hasn't seen it by now, they're never going
to
see it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you wouldn't listen to this podcast if you haven't seen it. But did you guys happen to see someone did a Photoshop of Adam Driver when he was like 11 years old, and then of Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford? I love that. I don't know who did it. Oh, that was so great.
It was so great. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, well, Lindsay, thank you for coming on the show. And once again, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you online, where they can find The Witch Who Came In From the Cold, and anything else that you want to tell them about.
Yeah, so The Witch Who Came In From the Cold is on serialbox.com. That's S-E-R-I-A-L, box, because it's serialized fiction. And you can subscribe to that, and then some other really cool series they have, like Book Burners, which Max Gladstone is also working on, and then Tremontaine, which is an Ellen Kushner-led project. And then you can find me. I'm Lindsay Smith, DC, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y. And you can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. Tumblr's mostly Kylo Ren fan art, but you know how it goes. And then lindsaysmith.net.
Awesome. Awesome. Very good. And again, you can, if you like what you're hearing, you like these kind of conversations with Lindsay, you can choose to support us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Well, just to tie it into Serial, if you're into serial fiction, I've got the second Cord Cahill serial out, Unfinished Business. Go check that out on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I am ATFMB online, Facebook, Twitter, and that's my website. So come say hello.
Sweet. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. We will see you next time.
Thank you.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?